down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house. Yet it did not fall, because it had its foundation on the rock. Matthew 7, 24 and 25. The candy dish. People who soar are those who refuse to sit back, sigh, and wish things would change. They neither complain of their lot nor passively dream of some distant ship coming in. Rather, they visualize in their minds that they are not quitters. They will not allow life's circumstances to push them down and hold them under. Charles R. Swindoll. From my stove to yours. Turkey tacos. Serves four. Ingredients. 1 pound ground turkey or lean beef. 1 15.5 ounce can black beans drained and rinsed. 1 package flour or corn tortillas. Lettuce, shredded. Tomatoes, diced. 1 bag of shredded cheddar or Mexican cheese blend. Directions. Brown the ground turkey or beef in a pan over medium heat until cooked through. Heat beans as directed. Add a scoop of meat to a warm tortilla. Add beans or place them on the side. Serve with shredded lettuce, tomatoes, cheese, and fresh salsa. Top with fresh salsa. 1 diced tomato. Chopped purple onion to taste. Chopped cilantro to taste. Salt and pepper. Chapter 4. Dad's Infinity and Beyond. One of the perks of acting at such a young age is that I earned a tremendous amount of money for such a young person growing up. You'd have thought that a girl in my position would have been living in the lap of luxury, wearing the best fashion money could buy, and driving the finest of cars. But Dad had other plans for my life. My father earned his living teaching public middle school math and physical education while raising a family of six. He believed people should work hard for the things they have, and so he instilled that idea in us. He could see that hard work was not only a prerequisite for success, but that it was also a prerequisite for strong character. Struggling for the things we get teaches us the all-important lesson of self-discipline while it strengthens our body and spirit. It wasn't enough for us to achieve a level of success in this world. Our parents wanted us to reach our full potential as people who are strong in spirit and mind. Although my brother Kirk and I were in a position to do it, Dad wasn't comfortable with the idea of any 16-year-old blowing truckloads of cash. The success of Full House and Growing Pains was phenomenal, but that wasn't about to change the dynamics of our all-American family. Maintaining a level of normalcy at home was also important. Whether I appeared on the cover of Brio magazine or walked the red carpet that day, behind closed doors, we were a family living much like everyone else. I still squabbled with my sisters when washing the dishes and waited in line for the bathroom in a house with three siblings. My rise to success didn't change the atmosphere of our family or offer me a free pass from hard work. Buying my first car was a bit of a battle. Knowing how much I enjoyed acting, Dad didn't think of it as earning in a sense of hard work. I enjoyed being on the set every day and loved acting, so it wasn't as though I was working in a busy supermarket dealing with angry customers, crying babies, and cleanups on aisle four. He knew it was income, but he still wanted me to learn the value of setting a goal, counting the cost, weighing the gain, and doing the legwork it takes in reaching that goal. It was time to sit down and formulate a plan. Taking a part-time job at a restaurant wasn't an option for me, so we got a little creative. During the height of success of Full House, I was also asked to attend massive events nationwide where I did autograph signings and public appearances, mainly at shopping malls or civic arenas. These events weren't nearly as glamorous for me as you'd think, and were particularly exhausting. Although it was great to meet my fans, trying to sign posters and take photos with up to 25,000 people at an event could get seriously overwhelming. But income from those events and sales from merchandise allowed me that additional hard-earned money. My dad agreed that once I had enough money earned from those weekends, I could purchase a car, so I got to work. After several months, a black Nissan Pathfinder rolled off the lot and into my life. I loved that SUV. About a year or two later, that same dealership had a great price on an Infiniti Q45, a luxury sedan that my dad had had his eye on but couldn't afford. I knew without a doubt that I wanted to buy it for him. And after talking it over with Mom, she agreed to let me. I never considered it a gift from me. Since I was part of a family, it was from all of us kids, the way I knew it should be. Together, we wrapped the car in a large red ribbon, tucked it into the garage, and waited for Dad to get back from school. It was an emotional moment for all of us when that door finally opened and we looked at his face. Humble and grateful, the tears stung his eyes. My parents chose to live a life as normal as they possibly could so that we might learn the value of setting and reaching a goal. We learned that a goal itself is not to be desired, but rather that value is found in the effort. By learning the hard way, Dad taught me 5 important steps in reaching my goals. Number 1, envision your goal. Number 2, formulate a plan. Number 3, consider the gain. Number 4, count the cost. Number 5, do the necessary work to achieve it. Both planning our goals and the means of getting there gives us a greater chance at success than living impulsively would. When things are organized and on schedule, the likelihood of success is increased. Unexpected obstacles often stand in our way, but if we invest in foresight and consider the ways we will deal with each hurdle, we are leaning on wisdom rather than chance. In The Ultimate Weight Solution, The 7 Keys to Weight Loss Freedom, Dr. Phil McGraw writes, "Because I have counseled so many overweight patients, I can tell you with absolute certainty why some people stay fit and others do not. If someone is successful in keeping weight off for 5, 10, 20, or more years, they have carefully planned thoughtful goals that they hold to and live by." The Bible also reminds us to consider carefully our plans before we set out to build. Suppose one of you wants to build a tower. Will he not first sit down and estimate the cost to see if he has enough money to complete it? For if he lays the foundation and is not able to finish it, everyone who sees it will ridicule him, saying, "This fellow began to build and was not able to finish." Luke 14:28-30. In that passage, Jesus was pointing out the cost of being a disciple. Life will offer us 1,001 reasons why we shouldn't follow Christ, but those who have built their faith on conviction won't give up because they've counted the cost beforehand and their eyes are fixed on the goal ahead. The same principle should apply to the important life goals we set. We consider the pros and cons before we start. Then we map out a reasonable plan and stick to it. The empowering words, "First sit down and estimate the cost," can revitalize any life when we put them into action. If we've mapped out a solid plan, we have a healthy chance of reaching the goal. And of course, success will also depend on whether you're doing all that you humanly can to adhere to the rules. Human effort is all that's ever expected of us, and is all we should ever expect from ourselves. Do you have a recipe for success? Have you carefully considered your weight loss goal and detailed the means you'll take in getting there? If you haven't taken that important step, I urge you to grab a pen and paper, a pretty little journal if you have one, and answer the 3 following questions in detail. Number 1, what is the goal you hope to attain? Weight loss? Better health? Release from the bondage of food? More energy? A fitness routine? Etc. Without a specific goal in mind, it's nearly impossible to attain it. Be specific. If you want to lose weight, decide how much you hope to lose and when you hope to reach this goal. Knowing how much you want to lose will be the measuring stick to the time and effort required to lose the extra pounds. It will also measure the lifestyle changes required in maintaining the loss. Number 2, what do you hope to gain by reaching this goal? I'll feel younger, gain respect, feel accepted, look beautiful, etc. Answer honestly, and don't worry, no one but you will peek at your answer. By looking at the emotion behind the goal, you may also discover your drive. Hopefully, this step of self-analysis will give you a deeper understanding of yourself. it could prompt you to choose a direction you've never considered before. If the answer is to be skinny, then go one step further and ask what being skinny would mean to you. Our reasons tend to shift over time, and therefore it's an interesting exercise to evaluate where you are today. Number 3, what is the cost? What is it going to take to make this change? Will you do the legwork it takes to reach this goal? If you want to lose weight, carefully map out the plan, listing the life changes you'll make to get you there. If drinking water is more important, then also list it here. If you want more energy, you will need to be eating well and exercising regularly. Be specific, listing things you need to eliminate as well as changes you need to incorporate. It might be that you are taking things slow, making one change per week, or it could be that you need to make several changes now. The ability to envision your goal and the means of getting there brings us that much closer to achieving it. We become travelers on a journey equipped with a compass and a map. Once you have decided exactly what your final goal will be, we can start breaking it down into smaller, attainable pieces. For example, if you want to lose 50 pounds this year, let's round that off to 52 pounds in 52 weeks. We can do the math and conclude that your focus for each week will be 1 pound. That's it. 1 pound per week. 100 pounds? Then you're looking at roughly 2 pounds per week, which is attainable if you've counted the cost and are willing to adhere to the plan. Author Mark Twain said, "The secret of getting ahead is getting started. The secret of getting started is breaking your complex, overwhelming tasks into small, manageable ones, then starting on the first one." You start by taking the first step today and concentrating on each step as it comes. If you can make it through one day, you have the same ability to make it through each day that follows. Standing face to face with a mountain can be overwhelming, especially when your perspective is that of looking up from the bottom. But if we decide to take one step and then another, looking only at the ground set before us, we realize the potential we have. Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. Matthew 6:34. Too often dieters will say, "I want to lose weight, so I'll start cutting back." And that's pretty much the end of the plan, as undefined as it may be. Be prepared for the Achilles heel of internal negotiation. If my best friend Delaney shows up with a box of chocolates for me tonight that I mindlessly munch while watching TV, cutting back may not hold the same definition that it held yesterday. If I have to start dealing with internal conflict between my desire and my thoughts, I could easily take the low road that leads to desire. Internal conflict is a constant fight between flesh and spirit. It's our desire opposing our wisdom, with both fighting for control. Without a set plan, we tend to negotiate a bit too much with the stomach. And when that happens, we all know who wins. But if I accept those chocolates with the foreknowledge that a small treat after dinner is in line with my plan, I don't have to negotiate. I can rely on a plan rather than impulse. 2 chocolates come out of the box, and the rest are put into the cupboard and out of sight until the next day. The plan doesn't mean you necessarily have to start counting calories. It could mean envisioning the size and frequency of your meals beforehand, then sticking to the rule. This is where wisdom takes over and willpower takes a back seat. The same thing can apply to exercise. The familiar line, "I plan to exercise more often from now on." What does that mean? More often can mean once, or it can mean daily. If you leave the choice up to whim, chances are you'll opt for the minimum rather than the maximum workout experience. Be precise. Develop a regime you will stick to. For example, if your plan is to walk for 40 minutes, 5 times a week, map it out by deciding ahead of time when you'll schedule your walks, where you'll be walking, treadmill, outside, etc. And if you can find a partner, then jot down whom you'll be with. By scheduling a time, we move it into our life and begin to shift things around it, rather than trying to squeeze it in where it fits. Priorities have a way of squeezing out the less pleasant activities, unless we make a point to prioritize them. In a 2008 interview with Larry King, Actress Ricki Lake, famous for losing over 100 pounds and successfully keeping it off for over a decade, way to go, Ricki, said, "It's all in moderation. I think it's being consistent. I think it's being conscious of what you put in your body. There's no magic pill. There's no secret. It's hard work and being consistent." She added, "Any diet works. I've done them all. If you stick to it, they all work. But you have to stick to that plan." The plan makes us conscious and aware of what we're putting into our bodies and how we are taking care of them by fine-tuning our focus. It eliminates bad habits while establishing good ones. When we prioritize items within the plan, we aren't wasting energy or spinning our wheels. Evaluation is important. If you aren't getting anywhere with your weight loss plan, take a close look to see where you need some adjustment. Remember that if you're drinking calories in addition to your meals, cutting them out will benefit you. Consider portion size to see if you need to cut back. Look at the extras like gravy, cream, and dressing to see if they are an issue. Setting a goal to lose slowly is not something most of us want to do, but it's a good way to go. And the truth is that time does go by fast. Imagine being 52 pounds lighter next year at this time. That's only 1 pound a week. Likely one frustrating hair-pulling pound at a time, which calls for plenty of patience, but imagine the difference it would make. That is if you even had 52 pounds to lose. Maybe it's that last 10, 20, or remaining baby weight of 30 pounds. Develop a plan, roll up your sleeves, and get the job done. In formulating a plan that works best for your life, I'd like to offer you this snippet of wisdom. If you want something you've never had before, you have to do something you've never done before. Author unknown. Think about that. Doing mediocre work won't get you in fantastic shape. If you want to wear a different pair of pants, you have to live differently. Living differently doesn't mean you need to change the world around you, but it does mean you'll have to make changes within. That's doable. Watch thin eaters for a while. You'll soon discover that most of them have a natural tendency to eat just enough. They haven't made eating a form of late-night entertainment, and eating isn't on their mind 24/7. In other words, it isn't their god. That natural tendency to eat just enough and to look at food as fuel rather than entertainment can be a part of you too over time. I don't look at food the way I used to anymore. I don't count calories. And I don't have to concentrate on stopping when I'm full. I've become so accustomed to living this way over time that it's ingrained in me now. The plan I started with in the beginning was one that would fit into my lifestyle. Eat the food that I love in moderation and exercise on a regular basis. I counted the cost, decided that I wanted to look good and feel great, and then did the necessary work to get there. I lost 20 pounds when I was 17 years old. And after each pregnancy, I was able to return to that comfortable weight once again. I even dropped another 5 pounds in recent years, staying at the lowest and leanest weight I've ever been in my adult life. My clothing fits well, I have more energy than I did at 16, and I've learned the value of working and the return that it brings. The pantry, chocked full of food for thought. The main ingredient. Mapping out a plan, considering both the pros and cons beforehand, and deciding how to handle those cons will bring you that much closer to reaching success. There's so many plans out there that fit a wide range of lifestyles. Therefore, it only stands to reason that some will be a good fit, while others won't work well for you. You may need to try a few out before you find your particular niche. The idea is to find one that not only works to bring you results, but is also a lifestyle plan you would be willing to commit to for life. A slice of advice. Dear Candace, I grew up watching you on television. I'm now 33 years old, and I recently became a mother to a beautiful little girl. She proved to me that God doesn't let you know how wonderful and amazing motherhood is until you have a child. My daughter is the single greatest joy in our lives, and we cherish her every day. Anyway, on to my question. I have been on your website and viewed your beautiful pictures and can't help but think, how does she look so good and stay in such great shape after having three kids? I was quite thin pre-baby, but I haven't managed to get my body back in the 8 months since she was born. Any advice on how you got into shape after your babies? I am breastfeeding. I'm not sure if you did as well. Therefore, I can't go on any strict diets. But I'd love to hear what your diet and exercise regimen were like post-baby. Marnie. Dear Marnie, congratulations on your daughter. 8 months in breastfeeding, huh? Surely you can shed a few pounds. My sister is breastfeeding and her son is 4 months. She called me this morning to tell me she dropped another pound. No, you can't go on any strict diets, but you can certainly eat healthier and exercise more. Walks with the baby in the stroller are perfect. Start doing it 5 days a week. I also love doing exercise DVDs when the kids were taking naps or before they woke up. Eat fresh foods, meaning no processed foods with ingredients listing words you can't pronounce. If it grows in the ground or on a tree and God made it without man fixing it up, eat it. Eat lots of fresh veggies, fruits, and lean proteins like chicken, turkey, and fish. I keep my portions small and try not to stuff myself. Halfway through, I check myself. Am I satisfied? Not full, but satisfied? If so, I keep the rest for later. It all comes down to your intake of calories. It's no big secret. I don't have any miracles. I eat healthy and I exercise. You can do it too. If you're not sure how to eat healthy, there are lots of good books or programs that can help you learn, like the South Beach Diet or Weight Watchers. Because you're breastfeeding, you can keep up your calories, but make sure they're good calories and not from high trans fat foods and soda pop. Here is my plan in a nutshell. Stop eating when you're satisfied. Don't eat fried food or traditional fast foods. Watch your daily intake from cheese and cream-based foods. Don't drink soda pop or sugary drinks. Eat lots of fresh veggies, fruit, and lean proteins. Keep desserts to a few bites. Snack on nuts, 7 to 10. Drink lots of water. Get some exercise. Candace. A pinch of practicality. If you want to take off the weight or you're looking to create a healthier lifestyle, then sit down for a while today and map out the plan. Remember that weight loss is all about calories in and calories out. Better health requires that you give your body the required nutrients it needs. Start by using the internet to find out what each plan has to offer and how that would fit into your life. There will be some pain for some gain, but remember, this plan is for life. The United States Department of Agriculture provides food guidelines for the average person as well as new moms and moms-to-be. You can find that information online through a quick search. It's a great place to start if you're looking to formulate your own plan. And guess what, moms? It also offers guidelines for your child's plan, too. Also consider your activity and weigh it against your life. If you're not that energetic, then you may choose to implement a rigorous workout plan for yourself. You'll find several calories burned calculators online that can help you make an informed decision. Finally, you can consider the simple plan I live by, which I've outlined above in the slice of advice. Maybe that one will work best for you too. Make notes on each plan, pray about it, and then make your choice. Food for thought. A recap of scripture to meditate on. Suppose one of you wants to build a tower. Will he not first sit down and estimate the cost to see if he has enough money to complete it? For if he lays the foundation and is not able to finish it, everyone who sees it will ridicule him, saying, "This fellow began to build and was not able to finish." Luke 14:28-30. Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. Matthew 6:34. The candy dish. The reason most people never reach their goals is that they don't define them, learn about them, or even seriously consider them as believable or achievable. Winners can tell you where they are going, what they plan to do along the way, and who will be sharing the adventure with them. Dennis Waitley. From my stove to yours. Grain mustard pork chops. Serves 4. Ingredients. 1/2 cup grain Dijon mustard. 2 teaspoons herb garden seasoning. 1 teaspoon crushed garlic. 1 teaspoon honey. 2 tablespoons freshly chopped parsley leaves. 1 pound thick-cut boneless pork loin chop. Directions. In a small bowl, combine the mustard, herb garden seasoning, garlic, honey, and chopped parsley. Reserve 1/4 cup of the rub for serving. Transfer mustard mixture to a resealable plastic bag. Add the pork chops and thoroughly coat with the mustard mixture. Let the pork chops sit for at least 5 minutes or as long as overnight in the refrigerator before grilling. Heat a grill pan over medium heat. Grill the chops for 6 to 7 minutes per side. Transfer to a serving platter and serve sprinkled with the reserved rub. Chapter 5. Heads up, eyes forward, shoulders back. While other celebrities were running on treadmills, heads up, eyes forward, shoulders back, I held onto a broomstick, sans broom, feet planted firmly on my living room floor. I was 16 and about to experience my first significant weight loss. My mom had a talent agency representing both children and adults, and since a client of hers was a personal trainer, they offered me his services. My weight was never an issue from the producers on Full House, but knowing how sensitive a teenager can be about her appearance, my parents wanted to provide me with the knowledge and opportunity to get healthy. While it wasn't a secret that I didn't feel great about my body, it wasn't a major issue either. The idea of getting myself in shape, living healthier, and losing a few extra pounds sounded good, so we invited him over to give it a try. Starting at 5:30 a.m., 4 days a week, 45 minutes per day, we worked out consistently in the living room of our house, using only a broom handle and 2 5-pound dumbbells, letting my body do the rest of the work. That, combined with both discipline and willpower, created results. We also talked about my eating habits. One of the things he advised, which has stuck with me for so long, is this. Eat until you're satisfied. Not full, satisfied. As I previously mentioned, most restaurants serve you at least double the portion size you should actually eat. So I suggest stopping halfway through your meal to ask yourself the following questions. Am I satisfied right now? Am I satisfied if I don't have another bite? Am I still hungry, or is it just in my head? These are the questions we need to ask until we're trained to recognize the hunger and full signals God has naturally provided to teach us to stop. Most people eat far past the full signal, moving on to seconds and thirds, and then on to dessert. If you're concerned about wasting the food, then take it home. If you get hungry an hour later, great, then have a few bites of that meal in the fridge. Or if you are at home, then put it away and pull it out later. Learn that you don't need to eat food just because it's sitting in front of you. If you're worried about passing up a dessert that is too good to resist, order one for yourself and take it home to eat later. Even if you're at a dinner party, most hostesses will graciously pack a dessert for the road if you explain that you're full. And remember, you don't have to eat the whole thing, just a few bites to satisfy that sweet tooth. Even when it's just a sandwich, a muffin, or a power snack, train yourself to ask, am I satisfied? That's what I started doing. And what I realized, along with having stopped halfway through my meal, was that my stomach was shrinking, and I no longer required as much food. I realized how much I'd been eating in the past, compared to how much my body actually needed. It's a simple concept, but one of the best pieces of advice I received. I remember one of the first times I met Pete. We were sitting in my parents' living room, and I was drinking a fruit-flavored iced tea. He looked at me and said, "I see what you're drinking, and you probably don't think it's bad because it's got some real fruit juice in it, but let's take a look at the back." He turned to the label and showed me the amount of calories and sugar in it. And he said, "You know, you could be eating some delicious food for the amount of calories that you're taking in just from this drink." Up to that moment, I'd never really thought about the fact that the calories I consumed in beverages were wasting valuable stomach room that I could be saving for the food I really loved. He went over things like basic foods to avoid, like anything fried, creamy sauces and dressings, high-fat cheese and dairy, and taught me to cut back on sugary drinks. He didn't eliminate these foods completely, but suggested that I limit them and start making alternative, healthier choices. Pete was great, calling me almost every day, at the end of the night asking, "Okay, what did you eat today?" Or he would call randomly just to check up on my progress, asking, "Hey, how did you do today? How are your workouts coming along?" I wasn't going to lie to him because I knew that ultimately the scale would tell him the truth at the end of each week. I was honest. His constant support and encouragement were a great motivator that got me off to a great start. I worked with Pete for about a year and a half. After formulating good habits, I went on to work out at some gyms and do stuff on my own, which fit in with my work schedule. Let's face it, having a personal trainer wasn't cheap. It does get expensive. But he gave me an incredible foundation that jump-started my journey to living healthy on my own. No, not everyone has the opportunity to have a personal trainer. I realize that. But it doesn't mean you can't have the benefits of one. The buddy system offers many of the same benefits. Having someone beside you, checking in, offering motivation, and being that encourager. But here's the thing. I have a couple of friends that when we get together, we motivate each other to eat poorly. We become girls who say, "Hey, we're together. I love junk food, and you love junk food. Let's go get Sundays and pig out." And so sometimes those kinds of friends can be detrimental to your goal. They certainly aren't bad people, but I think we need to choose wisely when it comes to who we buddy up with. It's so important to have a buddy plan, but I know that we all have some friends out there that we tend to eat worse with when they're around, whether we both want to lose weight or not. My point is to choose wisely. Will this friend stick with it, or will she cave quickly if you do? When it comes to your body, be a leader. Never fall into the role of a follower because it may lead you to stumble when you least expect to. If you know you are a natural-born leader, find someone who has significantly less control because it puts you in that position where you know you have to be the strong one, or vice versa. If you know you are weak and that you will cave the minute someone else does, then it's important that you find someone who already works out or is in good shape. You might ask, "Hey, can we team up and work out together?" In addition to trainers and buddies, we have an additional support system on which I have relied, Jesus Christ. When the changes we make are anchored in the will of God, and when our love for God becomes the driving force in our lives, we discover the ultimate trainer is with us, cheering us on. Newton's famous law of inertia states that an object at rest will stay at rest, and an object in motion will stay in motion unless an outside force is brought to bear upon it. For this reason, when we make our minds up to lose weight, outside forces can be an asset or a liability to us. You know how it is. You set out vowing never to eat chocolate again, and you do well for 2 weeks until a little girl is standing at your door with a box of cookies in hand, offering you a slice of heaven for only $5. You reach for your wallet, all the while convincing yourself that it's for the sake of the kids. The cookies sit on the counter for a few days while you decide who you'll give it to. After 2 days, you take one piece, and then two. Okay, so you decide you'll introduce chocolate back into your diet, but only a wee bit after dinner. A wee bit turns into a bit, and before long, a bit turns into a bit too much. That's when you find yourself right back where you started, and once again, you are a ball in motion until something stops your momentum. For me, that something is a mind renewed. And be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Romans 12:2, KJV. We all have goals. Some of mine include being a good wife and mother, building my acting career and production company, having a well-managed home, keeping my body in shape, losing and now maintaining my weight. These are some of the things I strive for. The good thing is that they've all been possible to achieve with God leading the way. The force that brings me out of the state of inertia is the lane switch I take when I stop following my own way of thinking and start following His. That's the constant renewing of my mind, also known as walking after the Spirit. It's been difficult at times to pass on scripts I've been offered when I know that other actresses would jump at the chance, to trust beyond a doubt that His plan is better than mine. But that's when I put the car into park, slide over to the passenger seat, and let God take the wheel. How do I know that His way will be better than mine? Because I trust that since He was faithful to me in the past, He will be the same faithful God in my future. If you believe that the direction you're taking is in accordance with God's will for your life, and I believe that healthy living is, I encourage you to press on in faith. Reverend Richard Cecil once said, "We are urgent about the body. He is about the soul. We call for present comforts. He considers our everlasting rest. And therefore, when He sends not the very things we ask, He hears us by sending greater than we can ask or think." Understanding that God is able to do exceedingly abundantly above all we ask or think keeps us pressing towards our goals. When we finally change the way we think and start walking in the light, we are able to achieve our goals. This hope for the future is power for the present, and it's power that will move in your life. Matthew 4 tells us that after Jesus fasted 40 days and 40 nights, He was tempted by the devil. What harm could it have caused if He had yielded to temptation and eaten one slice of bread? There are times when I also consider, what harm, if any, could this one guest appearance be? It's a popular show that would definitely boost my career. Yeah, it doesn't reflect good moral judgment, but... And then I remember Jesus chose not to sin, but to trust. He rebuked the temptation, saying, "Man does not live on bread alone, but on every word that comes from the mouth of God." Matthew 4:4. His ability to press on proved that he rested on the strength of the Father and on Him alone. I witnessed God's faithfulness and attention to detail in my own life with the unfolding of Summer, the character I currently play in ABC Family's Make It or Break It. When the execs and I discussed creating her at our initial meeting, I never asked that she be made a Christian. That was only something I discovered after, when the producers decided it would be a great element to add to the show. It's been awesome to share many of the same values and faith as the character I play, and to go to a job that I love every day. Now, if I could only be as organized as Summer, I'd have it made. Jesus understands the struggles I face with being a Christian in Hollywood, balancing family, friends, career, and the struggles I've had with food. That's what makes Him the ultimate trainer in my life. His mercy and grace add strength to my life. He not only equips me with the wisdom I need, but He is also the constant companion who motivates and encourages me every step of the way. You might be listening to my testimony, but find yourself skeptical since every past attempt to lose weight has ended in failure. I hear you, but this time, I'm suggesting that instead of relying on your strength alone, you draw strength in three ways. Why three? Well, first, the Bible tells us that a cord of three strands is not quickly broken, Ecclesiastes 4:12. So that's one reason. But I'm also suggesting this because every matter must be established by the testimony of two or three witnesses, 2 Corinthians 13:1. Who are the three witnesses? God, yourself, and a partner. Number one, stay in communion with God. Number two, monitor your behavior. Number three, buddy up and be accountable to a partner. This matter of two or three witnesses has not only been echoed throughout the Bible, it's one I echo so often in my own life too. When I have a problem, a decision, or excitement to share, I often run to God, to Val, and my best friend Delaney, whom I can trust for wisdom, encouragement, and support. Something about the number three completes the circle for me. So while other celebrities are running on treadmills, heads up, eyes forward, shoulders back, I hold on to my God, feet planted firmly on faith. I'm 34 and still walking this journey of faith. The pantry, chocked full of food for thought. The main ingredient. A friend with a similar mindset offers many of the same benefits a personal trainer can. Having someone who's encouraging you, is willing to check in to keep you on track, and can offer practical tips that are working for her is a blessing. It's especially great to have a walking buddy or a partner to take to the gym. But in addition to that, we have God, who's available 24/7. God, yourself, and a friend. Combine the three, and you have one unstoppable force. A slice of advice. Dear Candace, I've been following you in your whole career. I loved you on Full House and still do. I've seen all your TV movies on Lifetime and Hallmark. My kids and I watched you on That's So Raven, and now we're watching Make It or Break It. You seem to look better and better as you age. You've certainly slimmed down over the years. So can you tell me what you do? I'd really like to know what you eat on a daily basis. Thanks, Molly. Dear Molly, thanks so much for being a Lifetime fan. I hope I'll continue to make good movies and TV shows you'll want to watch for many more years. I certainly have slimmed down over the years. I really refined my diet about 8 years ago and have stuck to it ever since. Because our bodies change as we get older, I realize that I've had to adjust and streamline my diet with each passing year. Even the amount of food I could eat 3 years ago is slightly different from today. It's true that as we get older, we have to work harder. I've kept a close eye on the foods I eat and the exercise I do, and I know what works well for my body. My body and I have a strong relationship, working together to stay fit, strong, lean, and healthy. Here's an example of what I may eat in a day. Breakfast. Half a cup cottage cheese on one slice of wheat toast with lots of black pepper on top. One grande decaf non-fat latte. Lunch. Salad bar. Dark green lettuce. I pass up the iceberg because there's not as much nutritional value in it, nor does it keep you full for very long. Tomatoes, garbanzo beans, cucumber, onion, broccoli, cauliflower, beets, raisins, with a scoop of tuna fish or pulled chicken. I also stick to a clear dressing like olive oil and balsamic, Italian or shiitake mushroom. I measure out 2 capfuls of dressing and pour over my salad, or keep it on the side and dip my fork into the dressing before each bite. You'll realize just how little dressing you need when you do it this way, and it saves a whole lot of calories. Snack around 4 p.m. 1 cup of fresh berries or a banana. If I'm really hungry, I may roll up 2 turkey slices with a piece of low-fat mozzarella cheese, lettuce, and some spicy mustard. Dinner. Palm-sized piece of lean meat, chicken, pork tenderloin, or fish. 4 pieces of asparagus, and a side salad. I keep away from breads at night. 2 pieces of dark chocolate for dessert, 2 times per week. Candace. A pinch of practicality. There's a popular acronym known in the land of the lean as HALT. It means that when you feel like reaching for food, ask yourself first if you are hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. If you're hungry, then proceed. But if you are reaching for food in response to emotion, then halt your behavior immediately and deal with the problem at hand. There's nothing inherently wrong with putting food to your mouth. But if you're doing it to fill a void that should be handled another way, then you're not being the best manager that your body deserves. Next time you're mindlessly looking for something to eat, ask yourself if any of the following are eating at you. Hungry, angry, lonely, tired, depressed, guilty, PMS, thirsty, stressed, discouraged, wounded. Any one of these things can knock you off your game should they remain unchecked. Some of them are easy enough to correct, while others may require some soul-searching, prayer, and counseling. Food for thought. A recap of scripture to meditate on. And be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Romans 12:2, KJV. A cord of 3 strands is not quickly broken. Ecclesiastes 4:12. Every matter must be established by the testimony of two or three witnesses. 2 Corinthians 13:1. The candy dish. Two are better than one, because they have a good return for their work. If one falls down, his friend can help him up. But pity the man who falls and has no one to help him up. Ecclesiastes 4, 9 and 10. From my stove to yours. Bacon Brussels sprouts. Serve 6 to 8. Ingredients. 12 ounces thickly sliced lean bacon or turkey bacon cut crosswise into thin strips. 1 Spanish onion thinly sliced. 8 garlic cloves halved lengthwise. 2 pounds Brussels sprouts trimmed and halved. Coarse salt and freshly ground black pepper. Directions. In a large, deep skillet, cook the bacon over moderately high heat until browned, about 8 minutes. Using a slotted spoon, transfer the bacon to paper towels to drain. Pat off excess fat. Add the onion and garlic to the pan. Reduce the heat to moderate and cook, stirring until softened, 3 to 4 minutes. Remove the softened vegetables from the pan and set aside. Add the Brussels sprouts in batches and continue to cook, stirring occasionally until they are golden brown on the outside. Add the reserved bacon and vegetables to the Brussels sprouts in the pan, along with salt and pepper to taste. Cover skillet with a lid and cook, stirring occasionally until sprouts are just tender, 10 to 12 minutes. Chapter 6. Dressed in Designer Jeans. Looking back at the wardrobe I had on Full House, it's hard to believe that many fans considered me a fashion icon back in the day. Yellow scrunched socks, printed oversized sweaters, MC Hammer pants, Doc Martens, and Big Bang set the look for DJ Tanner, television's young fashionista. And let's not forget the shoulder pads. From about the age of 11, I had shoulder pads under nearly every outfit I wore. In fact, the wardrobe department had a special pair made for me that snapped onto my bra strap so I could wear them full time. Why, I'll never know. I could certainly understand wearing them under a blazer, but pajamas and t-shirts with shoulder pads just didn't make sense. I've accepted the return of 1980s fashion, even going as far as to embrace a pair of leggings of my own, but I still can't bring myself to wear shoulder pads or let a scrunchie enter my house. Can't do it. It's interesting to note that people on the internet are still asking how to style their hair like DJ Tanner. And others, noticing that it went from curly to straight, asked if I curled it every day. Here's the story on the hair. It's naturally straight with a little wave. During the summer before the second season of Full House, I got a perm, so I came to the set with it already curly. Once the perm grew out, I wore my hair straight with bangs that had a lot of volume. Not the standard straight-up 1980s style, but a sort of winged shape that covered my forehead. I originally had it styled that way at a swanky salon in Beverly Hills, and taking the style back to the hairdressers on set, we realized they couldn't quite get the same look. So the producers and my mom decided I'd go to the salon in Beverly Hills every tape day morning and have it done there before heading over to the Full House set. When I consider Andrea Barber's wardrobe, I really can't complain. Kimmy Gibbler was the epitome of fashion at its worst. And on those rare occasions when the wardrobe department let us dig in and take some of the clothing home, Andrea got the wee end of the stick. Even though I was admired by thousands of young girls around the world, I still struggled with my own imperfections, concerned about my weight, and concerned about boys. We women are funny that way. Things are looking up these days as far as wardrobe goes. Summer, the character I play on Make It or Break It, has the cutest designer duds. While most of the girls on the show are wearing leotards, I'm dressing in Trina Turk and Rebecca Taylor outfits. On an episode titled, Are We Having Fun Yet?, I wore an outfit by Theory, which was a short purple satin skirt with a silvery silk tank top that had a few ruffles across the front. It was topped with a black sweater adorned with jewels around the neckline. Black tights and black booties completed the fun party look. Summer definitely has a sense of style, and I'm loving it. The fun thing about being fitted while you're on a TV show is that there is a seamstress on hand, so everything is tailored and fit perfectly for me. It's so disappointing to go shopping after and find that things don't fit off the rack the way you know they can. When I'm at home with Val and the kids, or just hanging out with my friends, I'm most comfortable wearing jeans. I love my True Religions, my Rich and Skinny, and my Citizens of Humanity. And since it's so warm in California, I throw on a tank top, slip on my Havaianas, and I'm ready to go. I love fashion. Shopping seems to be my specialty, and living in LA gives me the opportunity to visit so many great stores. Shopping on Main Street in Santa Monica and then stopping at an outdoor cafe for a spinach salad, dressing on the side, and cold drink makes for a great afternoon out. People are always asking me about my style and how to stay current. The key to finding those pieces is to try, try, and try them on again. Most of us gravitate toward the styles we've always worn and feel comfortable in. Don't be afraid to step out of the box once in a while. Only you in the dressing room mirror will see if it's really that horrible. I do think it's important to go shopping with a trusted friend whose opinion is honest and hopefully has some sort of fashion sense. If I could go with each and every one of you, I would. That's how much I love shopping. I'm even known to do my own version of what not to wear with my friends in their closets. Oh, I'm getting excited just thinking about it. I like to step out of my comfort zone and try things on that I wouldn't normally buy. As a result, I'm often surprised at how different something looks on my body than it does on the hanger. I love shopping at department stores because of the enormous selection, but boutiques are great because of the personalized attention, helping me find the shapes and styles that fit me best. One more secret of mine? I'm a Lucky Magazine subscriber. This practical fashion and shopping magazine gives me ideas on what's new, where to find it, and what fits my body type best. As a Christian, modesty is also important. It's something I struggle with at times because everyone's view of modesty is different. For some, the idea of fashion is frustrating, to say the least. Going to the mall isn't all that fun when you're restricted to oversized clothing at oversized prices. Wearing the fashion is frustrating when your muffin tops are spilling over your jeans, underpants show every time you sit down, and skinny jeans are anything but skinny. I hear you, girlfriend. Clothes, makeup, hair, weight, and wardrobe? Let's keep it all in perspective. It's fun to look pretty and to feel good while doing it. But I often remind myself that this outer shell is simply an envelope for my spirit. The contents are precious, eternal, and costly, bought with a price. And the envelope has been fashioned by the world's greatest designer, the Creator himself. We are each God's one-of-a-kind design, and there isn't a single person in the world that's a match. I encourage you to read and meditate on Psalm 139, verses 13 through 16. For you formed my inward parts. You covered me in my mother's womb. I will praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are your works, and that my soul knows very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in secret and skillfully wrought in the lowest parts of the earth. Your eyes saw my substance being yet unformed, and in your book they all were written, the days fashioned for me, when as yet there were none of them. NKJV. Perhaps you're a size 16. You're basically happy with yourself, but you long to be a few sizes smaller. You might even feel that shedding a few pounds would give you more energy, add to your health, and give your figure a more feminine appearance. You may even dream of the day when you finally walk into a mall and find that the styles you like fit you well. On the other hand, you may ask yourself, is it really God's will or is it my own? Does God care if I'm a size 16 or a 6? Does God care if I lose weight? Let me say this first. God loves you just the shape you are, and there isn't a single number on the scale that could ever change that. Do you know how enthralled he is with your beauty? How he knows the number of hairs on your head? And how he treasures every minute you spend quiet in his presence? Yes, he loves you just as you are, regardless of your size, and there is nothing average about you or his love. But let me also say that God designed the female body in a beautiful form, curvaceous, soft, and feminine. He understands the desire we have to walk across the mall, to slip into smaller-sized pants, to like the reflection we see, and to hold a form of beauty both inside and out. After all, He created all things beautiful, from the smallest detail of a flower to the vastness of the midnight sky. And while He loves us, He has given us the opportunity to improve our quality of life, but ultimately, you will have to make that choice. No one will make it for you. Only you can weigh the cost and make that decision. Is it God's desire that I care for my body? Since it's the temple of the Holy Spirit, I have to say yes. Many health concerns are out of our hands, but in many cases, a healthy body is a reflection of an inner life that is balanced and one that has exercised self-control. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such things there is no law. Galatians 5, 22 and 23. If your body is rolling you out of bed instead of you rolling it, you've got to wonder what your heart is thinking. We can start by living by the Spirit while we stop following the heart of discontentment and doubt. Countless potential dieters are sitting on the proverbial fence. They desperately want to jump over to the other side where new life begins, but fear and doubt spring from the heart, holding them back. Remember, the heart will deceive us with all sorts of negative thoughts. You're getting older, and older people can't take off weight. You've tried so many times before, you'll just fail again. Your family is overweight, so you will always be that way too. You're too far gone. It would take years to get back to a normal, acceptable size. Your husband likes you overweight, so why bother? You like food too much. It's not worth the effort. Do any of the following thoughts affect your self-image? I'm not attractive. I'm fat. I'm a loser. I'm too masculine. I'm not accepted. I won't be good enough until... My body is disgusting. Nobody could ever love me. I hope you don't contemplate any of these thoughts, but unfortunately, many women who can't take off weight do. The simple fact is that if these negative, destructive thoughts are growing in your heart, you will be as you think. If you let those thoughts remain in your heart and accept them to be true, they will eventually blossom and form who you are. If you wake up in the morning only to look in the mirror with disgust, you've already started out on the wrong foot. If you want to live a life free from the bondage of food, the pull of the refrigerator, and the discomfort of those nasty waistbands, then start living that life today. You are beautiful, interesting, accepted, and loved by the Most High God. Be content with both the woman you are today and the woman you'll be tomorrow. You don't have to look back. Just keep looking forward. Maybe you failed before. So what? Failure from the past is not a reason to give up today. In fact, it's the very reason you should press on and make it work this time. Change what you can. You hold the God-given power to do that, and the great news is that He doesn't expect you to do it alone. What is it about helium balloons that light up a room so elegantly? Or that make children squeal with delight? Are they not the same as the ones we blow up at the kitchen table and let drift to the floor? No, they aren't. Nothing says, it's a party, like a grand bouquet of pink and white helium balloons. What makes them different is that one floats and the other one sinks. It's that simple. What we put into them makes all the difference in the world. We're hardly different. We are set apart from the crowd by the things we fill our minds with. Whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Philippians 4, 8. These messages help us rise above our strongholds. These thoughts bring us closer to the person God created us to be. What thoughts cloud your mind? Do you believe you can and will do what you set out to do? Or do you entertain negative thoughts that whisper, you can't? Believing in ourselves, but more importantly, Believing in God as our source of strength will change us from the person we were. We shouldn't want to be anyone else, but we can be the best God created us to be. It's that familiar prayer of hope. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Reinhold Niebuhr. The first step is to believe in yourself enough to get off